This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Booz Allen Hamilton is pleased to present a panel discussion on cost-effective IT in the age of mounting cyber threats as part of its Expert Voices panel series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Good morning. Welcome to the August 11th, 2011 panel event, Cost-Effective IT in the Age of Mounting Cyber Threats. This event is part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices Distinguished Speakers Series and is sponsored by the firm's Cyber Campaign and Enterprise Effectiveness and Efficiency. It is my pleasure to introduce Catherine Nelson, Senior Vice President, Booz Allen. Catherine?
Welcome. Thanks for joining me this morning to the Booz Allen Hamilton's Expert Voices panel entitled Cost-Effective IT in the Age of Mounting Cyber Threats. Thank you again for joining us. I'm Catherine Nelson, Senior Vice President with Booz Allen Hamilton. My focus is really on financial resource and performance management, specifically around cost analysis and control, operational efficiencies and effectiveness, budget planning and formulation, and other advanced analytic capabilities as they relate to managing major programs and specifically around IT. I expect us to have a very informative discussion around the topic this morning. Given the current state of the economy and with decreasing federal budgets and whatnot, there's increasing pressure to achieve efficiencies across the departments and at the enterprise level while delivering high-quality services to customers and stakeholders. The drive to spend every dollar and to spend it effectively on the right priorities is critical. In effect, we want to optimize the spend by investing in the right technologies and the right solutions at the right time. However, we're in a situation where we need to cut back. And how do organizations keep their IT systems and networks ahead of negative actors? And we all know they're out there. CIOs are grappling daily with an array of complex issues related to their investments, and at the same time, Chief Information Security Officers, or CISOs, are trying to prevent attacks while fending off existing threats. With this in mind, I guess I ask the question, what are the cost-effective IT solutions that deliver service and also mitigate cyber risks? What's the optimum balance between costs of IT solutions and security? And another factor to consider is the federal government's move to designing and deploying capabilities in a more modular or incremental way, as opposed to full system design and delivery. This move to an incremental approach is requiring a change in how we manage IT resources to ensure that the solutions that are delivered are sequenced appropriately and they actually realize the promise of efficiencies and then the expected capabilities and the effectiveness towards mission. For example, are there changes to policy or governance or guidance that are needed to ensure that cybersecurity is delivered along with the modules and the incremental changes that are coming? Over the last couple of years, as you probably all are aware, the Obama administration has released a number of mandates and guidance aimed at improving IT management, increasing efficiency and effectiveness, as well as new strategy and vision for cybersecurity. A few of these, and I apologize for reading some of these, but the June 16th Executive Order on Efficiency, Effectiveness, and Accountability, the 25-point plan for IT reform released by the federal CIO, the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace released by the White House in April of this year, the Accountable Government Initiative, which is an update on the Obama administration's performance management agenda released by the Chief Performance Officer, who's also the Deputy Director for Management at OMB, and then just released this last Monday, guidance from the Director of OMB on CIO responsibilities. Interestingly enough, concurrent with that release on August 8th, the new federal CIO, Steve Van Rokel, blogged on the OMB website He wrote, and he actually wrote about that guidance from the director of OMB on CIO responsibilities. He wrote, under the new memorandum, there are four key areas for all CIOs to focus on: governance, commodity IT, program management, and information security. With responsibilities for these four areas, agency CIOs will be held accountable for lowering operational costs, terminating and turning around troubled projects, and delivering meaningful functionality at a faster rate while enhancing the security of information systems, unquote. This brings us back to the discussion. So I think that given all of this, this background, I think today's discussion is going to be very timely. And I am happy to welcome three distinguished panelists with me today to talk about these topics. And I'm going to start with Susie Adams, who's the Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's Federal Civilian Business. Susie joined Microsoft Federal Sales in 1999 and has held several leadership positions in Microsoft as the director of the Reston Technology Center and most recently the CTO for the Federal Civilian Business. In her present role as CTO, she oversees and assists with the direction of the technical strategy for Microsoft's federal business. Prior to Microsoft, Susie spent over 15 years in the government consulting arena working with public sector customers. As a graduate of George Mason University, she began her career as a software developer for Navy Systems and has held numerous technical leadership positions for various consulting firms, including Booz Allen Hamilton. Susie was named as a Federal 100 Award winner in 2011 and has authored several books on the topics of software integration and web development over the past decade. Next, David McClure is the Associate Administrator of the U.S. General Services Administration Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. In this role, he advances GSA's responsibilities in serving the American people through open and transparent government initiatives to provide increased government accessibility to the public. He also identifies and applies new technologies to improve government operations and service delivery. Previously, David had an 18-year career with the Government Accountability Office, GAO, where he conducted wide-ranging reviews of major systems development and IT management capabilities in almost all major cabinet-level departments and agencies. He also served as an ex officio member of the Federal Chief Information Officer Council from its inception in 1996 through 2001. He received his Bachelor of Arts and a Master's degree in Political Science from the University of Texas and a Doctorate in Public Policy from the University of North Texas. He's also completed postgraduate work in IT management at Harvard and George Washington Universities. Our third panelist, Tom Pike, is former CIO for both the U.S. Department of Energy and Commerce, and he now serves as an executive advisor to Booz Allen. Tom has over 40 years of experience managing information technology with the federal government, and as I noted earlier, as a CIO for the Departments of Energy and Commerce, where he led the revitalization of cybersecurity programs. During his career, he also led IT research and various consulting efforts for the federal agencies and standards development at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, as director of the Center for Computer Systems Engineering and director of the Center for Programming Sciences and Technology. He received his BSEE from Carnegie Tech and a master's in systems engineering from University of Pennsylvania and has received numerous federal awards, including the Presidential Meritorious Executive Rank Award, the Commerce Gold Medal, as well as Federal 100 Award and the Executive Excellence Award from the Interagency Committee on IRM. So today, our panelists are going to focus on three topics. The first topic is balancing cost-effective IT and stronger cybersecurity solutions while maximizing gains in program efficiency and effectiveness. The second topic will be the importance of policy and governance in enabling all of these things. And our final topic is a discussion of possible synergies and solutions that would both drive and enable more efficiency and better security. I think our audience will agree with me that we certainly have the right panelists here today to address these timely topics. And all of these panelists and their respective teams, in fact, are dealing with these issues on a day-to-day basis. And so they're bringing real-life experience in how to be more efficient and effective while being secure. So, topic number one. Let's begin. The first topic, the first question, as I mentioned, is balancing cost-effective IT with stronger cybersecurity solutions while improving efficiency and effectiveness. For those of you in the audience and those of you that are listening, this discussion will most of you will agree that cost-effective IT and cybersecurity is part of every federal conversation right now related to IT systems and solutions. Balancing the cost of IT investments against the value that those investments provide to the business and programs is an issue that each of us is dealing with, and especially CIOs. Combine this with the tightening federal budget and goals to achieve better effectiveness in programs and in efficiency and capabilities, and we need to make sure that these efforts are coordinated and managed in an integrated fashion. So that's really the context for this discussion. With that, I'm going to ask David my first question. What questions, requirements, and expectations are you hearing from the citizens with their interaction with government?
Well, thanks, Catherine. I don't think they're going to be any shock to anyone. I think in general, citizens, as consumer of federal information and services, are looking for a high-quality experience in their interaction with government. Things are done with cost effectiveness. It's not done without that kept in mind. So I think that's the real key. But there are three things that we're learning from the lots and lots of interactions that we're doing with citizens through this administration. Number one is a focus on customer experience. I think that's really the key to a lot of the push of moving more services online. It's not so much about just pushing things online. It's the actual interaction that citizens have once they get there. Are they able to do anything? Are they able to find things? Are they able to do it efficiently? So I think that customer experience piece of this is really at play and emphasizes a lot of the online discussions, online strategies. So you've seen two things come out of the administration in this regard. One is customer experience directive from the White House, asking all agencies to begin focusing on the quality of citizen interaction on their websites. And number two, let's rationalize the website space in the federal government, because we have certainly proliferated websites over the last umpteen years. So those two things are being focused on. Citizens also increasingly are pushing for personalization, because they want the convenience of being able to tailor the interaction to their specific needs. So there's still this interest in personalizing the experience with government. And that runs right into the third major issue that we confronted, and that is the comfort zone of security and privacy. In order to do personalization, in order to do things efficiently in online transactions, requires some identity and credentialing services be in place that allows us to treat with some certainty who's doing what with whom. So I think that's the other big push from citizens. There is a magical bar in which they're saying, I want to be able to do these things, but I want to make sure, number one, it's done securely, and number two, I want my personal information protected. I want to know who's getting it. I want to know what they're doing with it. I want to know who they're sharing it with. But these are all huge, I think, challenges for us to kind of address in this technology age.
Thanks, David. And I would also ask, as we go through these questions, I may direct the question initially to one of you, but you're welcome to respond. And so I'd ask if you have something you'd like to add to that question or whether we should go to the next question.
I guess I would completely agree with you, Dave. And I think from an industry perspective, I think that's probably the biggest challenge, excuse me, that companies like Microsoft or Google or Amazon really face is when we look at the traditional types of services we've given to the communities, it's really more consumer-based, not really enterprise-based. And as we start to merge the two, the privacy and the data concerns really become key. And so I think working with specifically governments, but more importantly, just across industry as a whole and sharing best practices there and being as transparent and open as we possibly can be about what's happening to that data, what data is shared, what data isn't shared is really key here, as opposed to some of the practices of the past where it's really a black box or nobody really knew what happening was going on with their data.
Based on my experience as a federal CIO, my understanding is that our customers really don't care about how we use information technology, how we use IT. They really care about the missions and the programs being carried out to support those missions, and that they are carried out well. And there's an expectation that we'll use IT to help accomplish that. At the same time, there's an expectation, and it has been there for some time, and it's exacerbated now, that we reduce the cost of government. And that includes reducing the cost of the supporting technologies, including information technology. While the expectation has been for IT to be invisible, and it's just there and supporting these excellent services that they come to expect from the federal government, many of our services are delivered online nowadays, and that's an expectation, too, in society at the present time. They want first-class service, much of it delivered online. They want openness and transparency in government. And I agree with Susie's comment that there's an expectation of the private and Dave's privacy and security will be adequately supported in carrying out the mission.
Thanks, Tom. So my next question is actually I'm going to direct to Susie first, and that is, what are some of the technology trends you're seeing that provide cost-effective IT solutions and stronger cybersecurity?
So I think there's several different trends, and I'll talk first. You know, if we look at infrastructure optimization today, if we look at how the industry's grown up, in the IT space, we started out with systems, the early email systems, and we've kind of built upon these, right, as we've grown up. And if you go and look inside any federal agency today, you're going to see a very heterogeneous environment, and that environment it's going to be kind of tied together in ways that may be good and may not be good, but it's, you know, some legacy, some new, and it's very different. It's very difficult to govern that space. And so what we've seen over the last several years is a really big push to do IT optimization at both the data center level and at the client level, at the endpoint level, to make sure that you're managing both of those areas effectively and efficiently. And so, for example, virtualization is a technology that's now in place at the data center level to help you better utilize, right, the assets inside your data center and make sure that instead of using a particular server for 23% of the time, right, it's utilized for 80% of the time. And so we're seeing huge cost efficiencies when we go there. In the data center space. But at the same time, there's huge concerns about cybersecurity in the virtualization space, and there's been lots of debate about how you secure a virtualized versus a physically separated environment. And so I think we've made huge headway there as an industry with help from government, from NIST, and from folks across the board throughout the United States. And I think we now have a pretty, I think, decent story to say, to tell across the vendors about how that works and how you go about securing that from a cybersecurity perspective. On the endpoint side, I've seen some really interesting things happen with the Federal Core desktop configuration. Right, this is a really good start for locking down Windows-based client devices. But now as we go into the world of the consumerization of IT and we start to see kind of the flavor of the month of the device that comes out, if you're like me, I'm sure you wait for the next device and you get really mad at your telco provider because you can't turn in the latest, your old phone because you've only had it 4 months to get the next version, right, of some new phone that's come out. And that's only going to get more challenging as we move forward. And as we start to look at agencies as the population wants to bring these devices, and not just one or two, right? I'm sure if I looked in the audience today, we'd probably all have at least 2 to 3 devices, right, in our arm's reach. And so how do we go about securing those endpoints, right? When we have different vendors, different manufacturers making those endpoints, when we're used to a traditional world and a culture, frankly, that's used to securing and mandating from a governance perspective that only these types of devices can get in or have access remotely. There are many agencies today that don't still allow VPN. And so I think, if I had to categorize this into two buckets, I would say, yes, technology has advanced, and we're starting to see cloud computing, right, virtualization technologies. We're starting to see IT consolidation efforts with data center consolidation efforts, as well as better practices around managing those endpoints. But I think the other piece of this is really the human aspects to this and the cultural aspects and the governance of the and the policies that really need to change to be able to manage both these environments and do so in a cost-effective manner. And I think really you can't do one without the other. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now. And if the governance doesn't really catch up, we won't be able to take advantage of the new technology that's out there that can lower the cost of information technology for government agencies.
So I don't know if Tom or David had a question here. I mean, I think that, go ahead, Tom.
In recent times, it's been especially important to try to make best use of the resources we already have. And Susie touched on that with virtualization, which was step one. We've had servers, for example, sitting in data centers that were very, very lightly used. And that would tend to be the case for dedicated servers, for individual work groups or for individual applications. By using state-of-the-art virtualization technology, for both servers as well as for desktops, it's possible to make much greater use of the resource and to therefore reduce the cost of each unit of computation and each unit of and work that's supported by the computation. Cloud computing just takes that one step further, if you like, and builds on virtualization, and its sharing of resources in a larger sense. What makes this possible is both the continued evolution of technology. Moore's Law applies, basically a doubling of our capability to perform every year or two. But most importantly, for the use of cloud computing, for example, is the ready availability of high capacity networking. These high capacity pipes that we have across the country and the local networks that provide our connectivity to it. And the connectivity that, in the case of our customers and the citizens, the connectivity that they have, and that it's with high bandwidth and hopefully increasingly across the country, even higher bandwidth and even greater connectivity that help them take advantage of government services that can be delivered taking advantage of this new technology.
Catherine, I just add a couple of things. I agree with certainly the big technology trend right now is cloud computing. However you choose to define it and however you choose to implement it remains to be seen. But it's bottom line on cloud computing is it's attacking the IT optimization question. How can we run IT more effectively, whether we're talking about infrastructure or software? And I think that's really going to be something that continues for quite some time and something that CIOs have to constantly address. But I'll mention two other things that I think that are also big trends in the IT field. As we begin attacking this optimization of the technology piece, I think we're going to see more and more focus on the information piece. So I think business intelligence will begin taking on a great deal of new life support. We've been trying to do it for quite some time, but in the age of transparency, openness, and tsunami of data, I think everybody's going to be under duress to make sense out of the vast treasure trove of information and raw data that they collect and use it to proactively manage services in a much more not only cost-effective way but a high-quality way. So I think those are real key issues that technology companies would have to address. And the third area is security, is the security area. I think we were talking beforehand, Tom and Susie and I think we're back to this old question of how do we bake security in up front? Rather than trying to attack it as an afterthought, how do we make sure that our web application layer is saddled with security as it's being built, as opposed to detecting the vulnerabilities as totally relying on a detection mentality? Credentialing services, I mentioned. If we could attack credentialing services so that citizens could actually do transactions online with some confidence and with some privacy and security protections built in, I think that raises the trust level and the confidence level for that. And the last area is what I would call disclosure management or continuous monitoring activity. We're never secure. The moment we put a control in place and we certify it, it's only as good as that moment in time. So I think you're going to see a lot of technology focusing on continuous monitoring disclosure management practices, because it's just the reality of operating in the ubiquitous internet right now.
So each of you sort of nibbled around the edges of the next question I'm going to ask, and I'm going to ask you to respond to it fairly quickly so we can move on to topic two. Given the fast rate of change with technology, do you think the government is actually taking advantage of the latest solutions? And maybe, Tom, you could address this first.
Yes and no. I think there's a continuing need for technology refresh for all systems that the federal government operates and that it makes use of. And it's essential to refresh that technology in order to take advantage of new capabilities provided by new hardware and software, to be able to reduce costs by taking advantage of the newer technologies, which can provide a basis for lower per unit computation to support applications. And the newer systems provide better security baked in. And it's important to move in that direction. To the extent that development of new or replacement systems has not proceeded well and maybe been delayed, the government is often stuck with older technology, and that actually results in increased costs and less security.
I guess I would just add that I think one of the big challenges with adopting new technology, again, goes back to culture. Right. It's not that when we ask, if you look at a new technology, whatever that new technology that is that happens to be the flavor of the day, the first thing the folks that are running the IT shop say is that's not in my procedural guidelines. I need, I don't know how to run that application, and frankly, that has a port open on the firewall that I'm not going to allow in. And so I think we have a cultural aspect that we're in a governance problem that we really need to address at the same speed at which technology is now advancing. And I think that's really the big difference we're seeing is that, I mean, I know that most folks, if they have a young person in their lives, I mean, the speed at which they adopt new technology is daunting. Right? I mean, really, they can literally pick something up and be able to use it in a matter of moments. And so that's the speed at which I think the governance models need to change as well, and also the cybersecurity models that we put in place. And so what we're seeing a lot of movement around when you look at IT optimization models, also having cybersecurity optimization models and taking you through kind of a life cycle look. So, you know, first go look at your applications and put them in a risk model, right? A risk-based model from beginning to end. Look at the data. As Dave said, data is the most important aspect of this. Look at the risk and categorize your data and putting them into risk buckets. And then follow that maturity model from basic, maybe in basic is where you're using antivirus and malware protection on your endpoints to maybe even encryption on your endpoints to now I'm monitoring these with new technology that can go down and actually look at those endpoints all the way to the data center to get yourself from basic to standardize to rationalize, right, to dynamic. And in a dynamic world, when the zero-day vulnerabilities come up, you'll simply see the latest, greatest patch deployed to your application, not just your machine, and it won't just be a Windows machine. It'll be any device that you're using, and you'll be able to do this in a very seamless manner to your end users, regardless of whether they're on a fast connection or whether they happen to be on a very a slow connection or a smaller pipe and they're getting it through, for example, a Wi-Fi connection at an airport.
So that's actually a great segue. You mentioned governance, and I think, and you mentioned also the adoption of these things, which is a change management challenge. I think that what I'd like to do is move to topic two, which is focused on policy and governance. And I guess the focus here is, do we have the right governance and policy and process practices in place to enable looking at the technologies appropriately and getting the right risk mitigation strategies in place? And are we managing appropriately, or are we taking a check-the-box compliance kind of view in terms of policy and governance? And so that's what I want to focus on here. And let me ask Tom the first question. With all of the competing demands on federal IT to do more with less, are we in a position where we must choose between more security and the most cost-effective solutions, or can we balance them, really? And what are we doing to make that a reality from a policy perspective?
I believe we can balance all of the requirements. And, in fact, requirements for adequate cybersecurity are an integral part of the total requirements for a system, just like the functional requirements for the system and even the environmental requirements for a system. Susie mentioned baking in security from the beginning, very important, but that is only done by defining security requirements up front as an integral part of what the system is being built to perform, and taking that into account throughout the life cycle of the system once it's developed.
David, any thoughts or?
Sure. I think this is really probably a tough area. Have there been changes in policies? Absolutely. In fact, one of the things I think is refreshing to see this administration trying to put out policies that try to make tough judgment calls on things like cookies, on things like what's legitimate for the government to collect through online surveys versus not. Usually the policies are all about what you cannot do, as opposed to drawing a line in the sand and saying, on this side you're okay, on this side we're not really sure. So I think that's always tough. The governance processes, both for how we make IT investment decisions and how we make security decisions, still, I think, are fraught with a lot of complexity. And that's because in the government we don't have a comfort zone around risk. We want certainty. We want absoluteness. I want to say it's absolutely secure. I want to say we will absolutely save money by doing this. I actually want to show the cost savings as opposed to realizing up front with technology it's in a range somewhere that's yet to be determined until you actually get it online and start using it. So those are really, I think, some challenges. And I think the other last thing about policies and governance is that it's all done differently by all the agencies. So it's really trying to get some focus on some standardized way of making decisions and some standards in place on which to make those decisions so that we can operate with it a little bit more efficiently rather than saying, well, it's really independent, subjective judgment totally that are making these decisions. We need some standards in place to help guide that.
Any thoughts, Susie?
I guess I would just add to Dave's, I completely agree, and I think that if we look at the governance model, we are usually focused on what ports can be open, right? What applications can you actually install on your desktop? Do I want to remove those applications that you're not allowed to install? Instead of looking at it from a risk-based model, right? And creating a standards risk-based model across government would be huge, just as it was, you know, defining standards in general. And so I think if we were to take that approach and also bake in cybersecurity into that risk-based model so that IT funding decisions were made based on those risk models. And you could actually say, you know, this is, and I think actually NASA and JPL has done a really great job at looking at this at the cloud right now. And they basically have defined the data subsets and they put them into risk categories. And then based on those risk categories, they define what technologies are most appropriate, right, for the data and the risks associated with that data before they ever make that IT purchase decision. And so I think that's really going to be key moving forward. It's not going to be a one-size-shoe-fits-all anymore. And it's so ingrained even in my brain to think it's a one-size-shoe-fits-all, whether it's a single image for a desktop, whether it's a single, you know, particular desktop procurement that can only come from one vendor with this, you know, one particular image and only these applications on it. We now have to start to look at things in classes of users, classes of risk, that the data that the user actually looks at and then apply those governance policies to those categories of individuals. And that's a very different way of looking at things.
So given that, I'm going to ask Dave this question first. What specific policies or governance practices would you recommend that would actually enable more cost-effective IT solutions and best-of-breed cyber practices?
So we're trying to do, you know, we're trying to standardize the approach by which we're taking in government to make decisions about security. We're trying to reach some decisions around interoperability, portability standards, which we know are underlying a lot of difficulties of moving to the cloud. And we're trying to create a trusted framework where ATOs, authorities to operate, can be leveraged across many agencies as opposed to each agency doing their own. That's a huge shift. It's a huge cultural shift in government to start operating that way. But it's far more cost effective. We can save millions and millions of dollars in compliance control testing. We can actually move from a procurement decision to an implementation decision much faster because once you've been awarded a procurement, you have to go through a security controls test and authority to operate decision, which can take anywhere from 30 days to 18 months, depending on how complicated it is. So I think we could move technology in the government much faster when we attack this. So I think those are really critical for us getting some better results.
I believe we're moving in the right direction in managing cybersecurity to reduce our costs and provide better security. And the primary move in this direction, as I see it, is toward operational performance-based cybersecurity protection, rather than or as a complement to the more traditional compliance-based protection. As a part of this, is the direction that we now have across the government to use a risk management approach. This is led and supported by an excellent piece of guidance from NIST, the Risk Management Framework Guidance, which provides a basis for us to make decisions in the context of the risk, which is informed by the threat and vulnerability, as well as the controls that are either in place or planned to be applied for each system.
I think I agree with both of you. I think one of the biggest challenges that we've seen for technology adoption is the whole concept of, you know, certifications and accreditations and the time it takes when a new technology comes out to go through that process. And in speaking, you know, with my vendor hat on, I know it's been extremely painful for us to get through, whether it be DoD-specific testing, JEDEC, or whether it be getting through DICAP or FISMA. It's very expensive on our end of things, and it's different depending on which particular agency you're talking to, which makes it almost impossible for us to actually help agencies that even want to adopt the technology. And frankly, defeats the cost, the cost avoidance argument. So even if it is cheaper, it's going to help, whether it be citizens or agency employees do their jobs more efficiently, more effectively, and cost less. It can sometimes cost more because you have to go through this process. And the time lag between, the time the technology comes out and the adoption, it can't be 2 years anymore. The rate of technology change is so fast. It's literally every 6 months. The way that we'll deploy technology has changed. The analogy I like to use is, I used to go to Blockbuster and grab a movie and put it into my, into my DVD player, and I won't date myself and go back even further, right? And then now today, I go online and Netflix is streamed, to my house, whether it be through my provider or through an Xbox. Right, we're pushing out the software, and that's really what the cloud has enabled us to do, and that's only going to get more important, especially from a cybersecurity perspective. So that, I know that if anybody turned on their laptops, mine rebooted today, it's because several security patches got pushed down, not just for the operating system, but for the actual productivity applications that are running there. And so you're going to see a lot more choice. You're going to see choice where these applications get deployed, how they get deployed, how you use them. Right, and it's going to be a very different world, and the security. And I think FedRAMP, many kudos for FedRAMP still continuing on. I know it's been a very difficult process, and it's still not perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And I think if the federal government as a whole can agree on that approach, right, and agree to put that risk-based methodology in practice and in play, that we're going to see the adoption of technology really take off in the federal government.
So that actually begs the question, given everything that the three of you have talked about here, is are we effectively leveraging, or is the federal enterprise effectively leveraging innovative solutions such as cloud to increase cybersecurity and get performance gains and things like that? I mean, really?
I believe the answer is yes, the federal government is trying to. cloud computing, for example, is not a silver bullet. It has a lot of promise. And it takes a lot of work, though, to be able to take advantage of the cloud computing concept. Some of the things that Dave and his team are doing with FedRAMP to help ensure that we have adequate security associated with our applications and the protection of the data that we trust to the cloud environment are very important. We need to analyze thoroughly the issues of data integrity in a cloud environment. Gee, where is my data anyway, this minute or this second even? And is it sufficiently under control based on the best judgments that we can make? Is the reliability of the service we get in a cloud environment sufficient to support the particular application or applications that we have a need for? There's no such thing as perfection. There's no such thing as 100% reliability. And as Dave said earlier, there's no such thing as 100% cybersecurity protection. We need to balance all of these and make informed decisions to use new technologies such as cloud computing.
I would agree. I think we're on the edge, right? So there's a lot of really good work that's been done in this space, GSA, right, and their recent move to the cloud with Google's Mail, USDA's, with Microsoft's, some of the work that's been done in the Amazon cloud with Treasury.gov, Recovery.gov, are all, I think, they're kind of they're the risk takers. They've gone out there. They've put their foot. They've jumped into the pool. They're not standing at the edge like everybody else waiting to see if something bad's going to happen. And I think the challenge here for moving forward is a couple of things. One, you know, we've expanded the boundaries of not just the edge for a desktop, but the edge for the data center, and that's very, you know, scary from a cybersecurity perspective. And so I think, you know, it's going to be up to the vendors to, one, be as open and transparent about how they're doing things. It's not just about the certifications or which controls. It's how you manage zero-day vulnerabilities, how do you patch, how do you do continuous monitoring internally. The edges of where, you know, who's responsible for what blur, depending on which particular cloud model you're going into, whether it's infrastructure as a service, platform, or software. So as before, you know, I managed everything end-to-end. Now I might just manage the physical servers and you know, Microsoft or Google or Amazon is going to be managing the actual applications and the security of the applications. How do you do that handshake between the two? What's that governance model look like? What are the SLAs between the two? Right, we're just on, we've started to define that. We have SLAs in place. That will change rapidly as more users adopt this technology. What will also change is that people are going to, the systems administrators behind this, you know, in their own data centers, are going to be able to see and have visibility into this. And you're going to want to manage this heterogeneous environment, the old legacy systems running on, you know, a variety, whether it's VMware or Microsoft's hypervisor or a legacy Unix-based system or a Windows operating system, whether it's, you know, virtualized in your data center and a partner's data center, maybe a Terramark or maybe in the Amazon cloud with some services that now live in Microsoft. When you start to draw that diagram, that network diagram, what happens when something bad happens, right? You got a lot of interconnectivity there. And so we're going to see technology advances that are going to allow you to have a single pane of glass that manages that and be able to turn, you know, network connections on and off when you see these vulnerabilities and be able to manage the health of that. And that's just around the corner. And I think once that happens and people get more comfortable with this, we're going to see adoption happen very quickly. It's not going to be just one or two. I think everybody's going to jump in.
And do you agree, David?
Yeah, I do agree. In fact, you know, there's not a month or a week that goes by in Washington, D.C. that there's not a conference where you see innovation being recognized in the federal government, both by individuals as well as teams and whole agencies. So there is innovation. It is alive and well. I think the question is it big splash innovation or is it small ripple innovation? So we have a lot of small ripple innovation that goes on that often doesn't see the light of day. Because it's just not, somebody's made a determination in the media or in the agency that it's not a big deal, when really it actually could be a big deal. But I think our biggest challenge in innovation in the government is that we don't want to make a bad decision. So to avoid making bad decisions, we do one-size-fits-all approaches. We ask questions until we're exhausted, as opposed to accepting some risk levels that must be taken with new innovative technologies that allow you to maybe accelerate to a more cost-effective solution faster. And you do have to take a risk. You have to go on a limb a little bit to do that. But that's what the risk management frameworks that have been devised both in capital planning as well as in security are supposed to allow agencies to do, is to make that. I think our other last big challenge in this area is, I think Susie mentioned it, is just the pace of change in technology. Cycle times for software versions are days, not weeks and months. It's now days. So I have to be able to push to a user. If I'm a Google user, I show up every day and there is a new feature in Google email that's been loaded up overnight because they've added some functionality based upon either a company decision or user feedback. There's no longer, you know, waiting for version 5, version 6, 18 months from now. It's that quick of provisioning. And yet we're not really set up to accept that kind of technology change that fast. We're really battling that in the FedRAMP process. What constitutes a significant change in the cloud service provider's technology, software, or service that warrants a new look at security? When does that magic bar get passed? So it's a real challenge, I think, in the public sector space.
So with that, I'd actually like to turn to the third topic, which is more focused on synergies and solutions. And as we look ahead, I guess I want to focus on, are there synergies to be gained between the public and private sector and across departmental entities about the things that they're doing in terms of best practices and lessons learned and so on? So the first questions that I question that I have, and I'll direct it towards Tom, but I'm interested in all of your perspectives. What kind of mechanisms, processes, or actions do you think could be taken to strengthen the tie between cost-effective IT, cybersecurity, and mission effectiveness? And I think that actually builds on points that you just made, David, or and you've all made this morning.
Well, at risk of promoting a go-slow approach as opposed to a go-fast approach that Dave was just talking about, it's essential to define and scrub requirements thoroughly, all the requirements, before taking the next step in developing a new system or an application. How many systems have run into trouble in the development, at the various development and testing stages because the requirements weren't well-developed and well-defined? And just as important, throughout the development process, to manage requirements creep carefully, to have strong configuration management. And as a part of this process, to manage cybersecurity for systems and networks, just like any other part of the system. It's an integral part of what needs to be baked in, at the same time that it's important that the organization, the agency or the sub-organization within the agency, have a strong cybersecurity infrastructure in place that includes top-level visibility and involvement by everyone to support system-by-system security in a cost-effective way.
So in the interest of time, I actually would like to go to the next question. Maybe Susie can address this. Who are the key players? Who needs to be involved in this conversation?
So I think there's players on the inside of an agency, and then there's players that focus on interagency as well as industry. So let me focus on inside the agency, or it could be an agency, it could be any public sector or private sector company as well. And so what we typically see, and I grew up as an application developer, was, and I hated the security guys because they told me what I could and couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And so typically what we tend to do is we tend to segregate those meetings, and we don't all come to the table as one to talk about the risks of the data, the cybersecurity needs, right, and the application requirements, and how are we going to do continuous monitoring, and what endpoints are going to get access to this. We don't really focus across all aspects, right, of the life cycle of an application when we're looking at this, whether it's choosing a commercial off-the-shelf product or whether it's building something from the ground up. And when we start to look at the players that are involved in that inside an agency, there's, you know, government, obviously the government employees as well as the contractors involved. And so a lot of times even the contractors are segmented based on their role, right, in a particular deployment. And I think we need to do a lot better job at having all those communicate and be on a single team and function as one, which can be a little bit challenging given, you know, contractual challenges that are out there. The second thing I'll say is the interagency sharing and even national government sharing. And we've seen a lot of that happen over the last couple of years, but I think that even needs to be expanded. You should be able to very quickly get access to your peers in another agency as an employee, or get access to somebody else, even in the contracting world, to another contractor that might be doing similar work to you in another agency, so that you can share best practices and ideas. We've tried to do some of that today. It's not perfect. We need to get much better at that. It should be very easy, for example, for you to be able to go do a search on a government-wide system that can allow you to find the expert in a particular technology, right, and be able to do those types of things. And then I think we need to get better from an industry perspective at sharing best practices across with governments. We're doing a lot with NIST, huge work being done with NIST right now in the cloud space and with FedRAMP through IAC, but I think we need to get better at that as well from a cybersecurity perspective. I know we have something, we have cybersecurity centers that engage with government on a regular basis and provide best practices, but I think industry needs to get better at that as well, and we need to share information more widely, and we need to be able to share that in an environment with agencies. So I think it's across the board. I think it's just not one group of actors or people that need to share.
Do you have a quick thought on that, David?
Yeah, I'm going to leave this on constantly now, that way. So I just throw out a different perspective, because I agree with who the key players are. But oftentimes, I think what we've learned through citizen engagement techniques like challenges and contests and collaboration platforms, which are starting to take hold, that oftentimes the answer to some of our problems is not in our organization. A lot of times great ideas and innovation lies on the outside, and we're just not inclusive enough to allow that voice into the tent. So I think that's another lesson learned for us, is rather than assemble all the people that we think have the ability to solve the problem, let's open the queue a bit and allow fresh new ideas to come from folks that might not have any expertise in technology, but they have some darn good ideas.
So we're actually nearing the end of today's discussion, and we've had a great discussion about balancing cost-effective solutions with the need to manage cyber risk. We've talked about policy and governance. We've talked about synergies and some solutions. What I'd like to do next is to have each of you address to tell me what you believe the greatest hurdle is to getting where we need to go between balancing cost-effective IT and managing cyber risk. If you could sort of give me one or two lines and your perspectives on these, and we can start with David.
Great. Well, you know, let me just caveat it by the challenge of doing cost-effective, strong cybersecurity and effective programs in a public sector environment. This is a political animal that we live in. So I can identify a very cost-effective solution. I can make the perfect business case for it from an agency perspective, but there might be external decision makers that don't agree with that for other reasons, and therefore we don't do it. So that's the challenge of the public sector, is that it's a very, very deliberative process that involves a lot of people sitting at the board of director chairs. And what makes good business sense might not always get picked. But I think the biggest hurdle, I tried to think about a way of just saying this, are trust-based decisional frameworks. If we can move to trust-based decision-making rather than the fear of making a mistake and compliance activities that force us to go through every conceivable configuration of a decision to make sure that we're eliminating risk, we'll never eliminate risk. We always have to mitigate it. So I think that's the key for us to move forward.
Susie.
I completely agree. So I would say two things, budget and culture. Right. So we say that, you know, we have a decreasing budget and we want to be able to take advantage of new technology that helps us lower the total cost of ownership and improve return on investment on R&T investments. But you have to invest to be able to replace either the aging systems that are there so that you can lower your total cost of ownership. And if you don't have budget to invest or you haven't planned for it, you can have the best ideas in the world, but you'll never be able to implement them, kind of to your first point. And the second point is, yes, I think it's the culture is so risk averse, right? And so, you know, and I won't even say stuck in the past, because I think everybody realizes we need to move forward. It's just, how do you go about moving? You know, there's a gigantic aircraft carrier there and you have to move it. Right? And they don't turn on a dime. And so how do you quickly make that aircraft carrier turn so you can take advantage of that in a year versus 2 or 3 years? And that, especially with the challenges with funding and budget cycles and how people procure today, I mean, there's lots of different challenges. So,
Tom, you have a few seconds.
We need greater recognition by all levels of management that adequate cyber protection, cybersecurity protection, is an integral part of using IT to support a mission. If you need IT, you need cybersecurity. Throwing money at cybersecurity is not a solution. Priorities apply here, just like in all other aspects of design, development, and operation of the systems. And the subject, the bottom line, as my fellow panelists have said, is risk mitigation, not preventing all risks.
Thank you. I want to thank all of you. This was a really, really good discussion, and your contributions and your thoughts on these topics were really important, I think. Today's Expert Voices panel, Cost-Effective IT in the Age of Mounting Cyber Threats, featured Susie Adams, CTO for Microsoft's Federal Civilian Business, David McClure, Associate Administrator of the U.S. General Services Administration Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, and Tom Pike, former CIO for both the U.S. Department of Energy and Commerce. This Expert Voices panel was brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton and Federal News Radio, and I encourage you to listen to this panel on demand, watch the video, and read expert commentary on this topic at www.boozallen.com/expertvoices. I'm Catherine Nelson with Booz Allen Hamilton, and I thank all of you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Booz Allen Hamilton's panel discussion on cost-effective IT in the age of mounting cyber threats on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. To hear this show in its entirety and more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.